Hi, this is Antoine Cadeau-Wood with CRM Expert, and welcome to this podcast. My guest today is Shivali Shah, who is the Customer Experience Practice Leader at PricewaterhouseCoopers. Shivali will also be at CRM 2012 in Orlando, presenting on the topic of leveraging every customer interaction as an opportunity to assess and improve the customer experience. Welcome, Shivali.
Thank you, Antoine. Pleasure to be here.
So this presentation that you're going to be giving at CRM 2012 is based on a survey that PricewaterhouseCoopers took in 2011, the Experience Radar. Could you tell me a little bit more about that survey and how and why it was conducted?
Sure. The Experience Radar is actually an annual study that measures experience across multiple industries and thousands of customers. And the industries we survey actually fall across a spectrum from more transactional or product-related industries such as retail to more service-oriented ones like the healthcare payer and retail banking spaces. And what we wanted to do is to really provide a quantitative lens to customer experience. Experience, I'm sure that, you know, you've had on your own personal realms, has been talked about in a very subjective manner. Folks will say, you know, this was a great experience or this was a really bad experience, but it was very hard to really understand what was driving that experience, and at the end of the day, how does that actually relate to business metrics, what I'm targeted at the end of the day. So what we wanted to do is to really, again, draw this to hard metrics. And the other key area that we were looking to do is filling the gaps with where we saw current assessments. So there are a couple of studies that are done, such as NPS and CSAT, that you may have heard of. And so there are a couple issues that we wanted to close the gaps on. The first is that we felt that some of these assessments were not holistic. It was very single-dimensional, and it looked at an outcome of experience rather than a true driver. So when I say outcome, that's more on loyalty or customer satisfaction, which are results of good experience, but not necessarily the drivers of them. The second key gap we wanted to fill is we wanted to make sure that the insights were actionable. So some of the assessments out there that I've mentioned, also a couple other indexes that are out there for customer experience, they provide a number, but the issue is they don't tell you how to tactically improve on that score. And so it's very difficult for a company who may get a ranking or a score to say, all right, great, I'm 20% below the average. What can I do now to improve that score, let's say, a year from now? Another key area is we saw that some of these ranking scores were on a scale that was very general, and it wasn't customized to an industry. So for example, if I put a healthcare clinic on the same scale as a retail store, I'm automatically going to be very biased in the sense that I want to go into a store and purchase a shirt versus I don't want to go to necessarily a healthcare clinic. So I'm already going to have a differential in my experience. So we felt it had to be very customized at an industry level. And the other key area is using the right methodology to really get at actual behavior versus perceived behavior. So a lot of the traditional methodologies using these assessments ask folks what they value using traditional techniques. And what we felt is that you really need to simulate a marketplace and really get at their behavior rather than asking, because a lot of times people just don't know what they don't know. So that's essentially why we decided to conduct this, and we wanted to close the gaps and look at particularly three key questions, which are customized at an industry level. And the three questions that we wanted to address to make sure that, again, this could be quantitative and very customized at an industry level is, number one, understanding what customers truly value in an experience. So that was the first key thing. The second is, what are the things that they value that they're actually willing to pay for? And Antoine, these are two very different concepts that are very critical to understand. So for example, in online banking, I value that I can check my online account and I can do transactions, but I'm not willing to pay for that. And that is a very critical component because as a company, that is what we call a table stake. You need to provide those features as part of your core experience and do not charge for those elements. Versus elements that I value and I'm willing to pay for, that could be, for example, in retail, which we saw with free shipping. I'm actually willing to pay a couple dollars extra on my product for free shipping. And again, we've seen this, think of the Zappos model. Their product is maybe a couple dollars extra in terms of their actual core product, but folks are willing to pay for that ease of shipping. And the third area is we wanted to tie these both back to business metrics, such as repurchase and loyalty rates. because at the end of the day, it has to tie back to metrics in order for businesses to make decisions.
So you mentioned to me earlier that that at PricewaterhouseCoopers, you actually have a somewhat different definition of customer experience than other people who deal with the same thing. Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Sure. So our approach to customer experience, as most companies are, it is about your multiple interactions. But the key is what are the components of those interactions? And what we look at is essentially three things. The first is your personal interactions with the company. So that's, for example, when I walk into a store and I am talking to a sales agent, or if I'm calling a call center due to an issue that I have with my claims. All of those personal interactions are part of your experience. The second key area are the stories that we hear from other people. I may have never flown an air carrier that my other friends have flown, but they've told me enough about it. I've seen advertisements on it on the web as well as on traditional advertising that I have a pretty good idea of that brand, how I would perceive the quality of that experience would be. So that's another key component. And this is especially important as we think about, for example, social media and how other word travels when you haven't had actual experience with the company. The third key area is what we call moments of truth. These are profound moments that a customer has with a company. These are very different from what I mentioned before, the personal interactions, because personal interactions can last anywhere from minutes to possibly days. MOTs, moments of truth, can last anywhere from weeks to years. They are burned in your psyche. And so combining these three things is truly how we define experience. And that's how we've actually structured a lot of our assessments and also how we design not only analyzing the data, but also how we produce the insights.
So I've had a chance to actually look at some of the results that you're presenting about the survey. And you mentioned loyalty a couple of times in your explanation. And I think actually for me, that was one of the most surprising parts of the survey. Could you get in a little bit into some of the findings you had about loyalty programs?
Sure. So loyalty programs seem to be the popular kid on the block nowadays. In 2011, during our research, we actually found that 95% of retailers said or they plan to have loyalty programs. But what was really interesting that you caught actually in our study is that it rang loud and clear that rewards programs alone do not drive loyalty. It actually ranked last when it came to top things that shoppers said influenced their purchase decisions. So we asked other things like price and personal experience, the convenience of the brand. And amongst all these, in addition to some other dimensions, loyalty ranked last. And what we found is that the psychological rather than the economic switching costs are more powerful to drive loyalty. And by economic, I mean such things as promotions and discounts. Psychological, we more refer to things that come in the form of convenience, for example, or strong relationships with your staff. And further, what we found is those long-term relationships with the staff and those attitudes, that's really what drives experience more than anything else that we saw. So, for example, in retail, which is very similar to a lot of our other industries, as I mentioned, roughly 50% of good experiences were actually driven through good staff. So again, it's really key to understand that loyalty programs cannot drive loyalty.
Right. So that's really the key term difference to keep in mind, I get the impression, which is the difference between loyalty and loyalty programs. And I think you talked a little bit earlier about drivers versus outcomes. You were finding that really those loyalty programs were focusing too much on the outcome and not the driver. Would that be correct?
Correct. I mean, there are some great companies right now who are understanding this, and they are tailoring their loyalty programs to more of behaviors and what people need. So again, I think the key is, as I mentioned, a loyalty program alone can't solve the loyalty conundrum. There is absolutely value, though, you know, in providing, for example, it provides great customer demographic information, it provides great information on transactional information that can be shared across the organization for product development and marketing. But this should be used in combination with other experiential initiatives. So as I mentioned again, the first order of business should be make sure you're focusing on your employees because they have such a big impact on your customers. And especially pay attention to those that are facing your customers. So making sure you hire the right people and that you're also providing the right training and tools for them to handle issues as they arise.
So at the end of the day, it seems that regardless of the loyalty program, it really is just the experience that the customer has inside the store or in any given transaction with a business that's going to determine whether they come back or not.
Again, I think it's a combination because, again, given this day and age with what's going on with the economy, I think economics do play into it. But I would say that right now, definitely focus first on the experiential elements before you throw in a loyalty program, just to assume it's going to fix the problem.
So speaking about different types of customer experience, one of the big trends in business and in IT specifically for the past year, and I think more than a year, has been the importance of being mobile, all of the different mobility projects that are either customer-facing or internal to a business. But reading through some of the Experience Radar data, there seems to be a slightly more complicated picture about mobility that emerges. Some of the data seem to be showing that not everybody necessarily wants to interact with a business in one way. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
So we are moving towards a more digital society. We've seen this over the last decade, and the name of the game are cost savings and efficiency. Something, though, very critical that we saw in a number of our industries, whether it be in the more transactional industries such as retail or whether it be in the more service industries such as retail banking, is that the human touch is absolutely critical during certain touch points. So let's take retail banking, for example. What we found is that technology, again, though driving efficiency, it falls short in showing empathy and also investigating certain customer issues. So roughly two-thirds of our respondents valued banks going above and beyond when they ran across critical issues where human intervention is absolutely critical during these points. In another industry such as retail, we found that actually human involvement helps confirm purchases. It's very important, especially as you look at larger investment purchases. So customers are not loyal to one channel. They want to be able to browse in one channel, be able to shop in another and get servicing in further another one. And so what we found is that, for example, roughly 40% of the folks that we surveyed, they want to be able to have that multi-channel experience. And when you're talking about larger purchases, we found that even, you know, one-third of those that had a good experience with the staff were actually due to knowledgeable staff recommendations and just knowledge. It's that interaction, again, that human interaction that helps verify certain purchases, which is especially important in this day and age, given the people's aversion to purchasing elements that are above their means or other pieces. So that's especially important. The other element around technology is with the QR codes. So again, we see QR codes that are being plastered across various products and across billboards. We wanted to test to see what actually had value and what was worth a premium for folks. And what we found is that QR codes that were on advertisements were valued, but the ones that were actually within the store were even further valued. And that just goes back to the point is I want to be able to have information at my hand when I'm in the purchase or when I'm at least looking at it. So having that QR code on the back of the products while I'm in the store really helps give me that information right there and then that can help then further validate a purchase or no. So that's some of the interesting things that we saw with mobile in these industries.
So I'm interested in what that does to some of the models we have for interaction with different sales channels. So for instance, there's a very interesting quotation in your presentation where a customer is saying, when buying a TV, the salesperson was very helpful and accommodating, answering all of our questions, even after they found out we'd be buying online. So the incentive system we have for most salespeople at this point is that they earn commissions depending on how much they sell. That's the fairly normal retail model. So what does this desire for a multi-channel experience do to that model? Are there changes that need to be considered there?
Yeah, you bring up a great point. It's about the breakage points that you see in the organizational structure. What we've seen is that there is a lack of collaboration across the organization, so whether it be your sales folks, the folks in marketing, and there's also a misalignment in the incentive structures. And companies, as we know, are notorious for not being able to collaborate across these functions. They sit in their own silos. They speak their own language. So the key is really setting incentives from the top that encourage collaboration across the organization, and also making sure that the CEO and the rest of the executive suite really supports customer initiatives because it's not going to happen from the bottom or the middle of the organization. So especially when you have a sales force that's just being incentivized on sales, it's not going to work. You need to make sure that there's a holistic set of metrics, whether sales could be a component of that, but also looking at maybe customer support or impact. Because at the end of the day, that's really what's going to drive these customer experience-related initiatives. Because the relationship with the customer is not just about the short-term transactional sale. It's really about the long-term relationship. And part of that may be goodwill in the short term, but it does translate to sales down the line. So the key, again, is making sure that you have the right things in place to allow collaboration for data to be shared and to be also new ideas to come about, but also making sure that that incentive structure is aligned with supporting experiential initiatives.
So at this point, I'm a business owner. I'm listening to your presentation. I've just been told that my loyalty programs perhaps are a bit misaimed. I've been told that my sales force is not incentivized properly. And I've been told that many of my IT investments maybe should be spread out a little more than I thought they should be. At this point, my question is, what do I do? And so in addition to this survey, there's a methodology that you're proposing. And so I was wondering if you could give me a little bit more about that.
Sure. So you've hit it on the nail in the sense that everything's about a trade-off. We have a set amount of resources, a set amount of time, and a set amount of people. So the thing is, where do we place our bets? And that's what we wanted to assess in this study, is to really understand the trade-off. And so the way that we've set up the methodology of this survey, which is at an industry level, but again, can be done at a company level, is to test various features within the experience. And so what we do is we then provide various, we do a simulation model where it gives respondents various feature sets to a product and at various price points. And we start to figure out, similar to unpeeling an onion, what truly they value at the core of their experience and also then what they're willing to pay for. And the output that comes out from this is very critical on a couple elements. Number one, as I mentioned, is we figure out what they value. And not only what they value, but what are they willing to pay for. So there are certain elements, as we call table stakes, that you may not be willing to pay for, but that they really do expect in an experience. So those are where investments should go, you know, from a company standpoint, if you want to play in that game. The second key area we look to uncover, as I mentioned, is what we call ACEs. Those are the things that folks say, I'm absolutely willing to pay for, and you know what, I really do value this. And why you'd want to place investments there is it helps you differentiate from your competitors, but it also starts to uncover ancillary revenue opportunities. So again, allows you to start gaining and garnering more revenue on these other areas. So that's sort of the important aspect of what this methodology can uncover. The third area is a lot of traditional segmentation is done on demographics. So, and it doesn't look, for example, at behavioral elements. What we look to do is to uncover, it's what we call a needs-based segmentation. What do people really value and need? How should that drive the segmentation? Then we overlay, for example, other things such as gender and age and purchase behavior online and offline. So that gets us to a segmentation schema that then allows us to see who would be targeted for experience-based offerings. So that's another key area that the methodology does uncover as we go through this.
So in terms of that segmentation model, you know, we have sort of our traditional segmentation traits, I guess you could say, which is things like age or gender or marital status or location or anything like that. So what sort of traits are we looking for in this new model?
So what we like to do, as I mentioned, is first understand what folks really value. And based on that, that's how we actually segment the group. We further, as I mentioned, overlay things such as income and gender and region, since we know that these still do drive purchase decisions. In addition to other things such as how likely they are to repurchase after a good experience, what percentage of the time do they do online shopping versus offline to understand their adoption for digital channels. So all this information gets fed in for us to actually look at the respondent pool and then segment it accordingly. And again, the reason this is important is if you're developing experience-based offerings, they're not cut on demographics. It's really cut on my need, what I need as a customer and consumer. So that's why it's a very important nuance from traditional segmentation.
So the game here is more to understand what people's habits are and what specifically they're looking for.
Exactly, because especially with social media and as the lines have been blurred across markets, it's no longer I'm similar to you because we're the same age and we live in the same city. It's I'm similar to you because I might be in the same life stage or because I enjoy shopping online or I really enjoy the convenience I'm willing to pay for a little bit to be able to access my accounts more readily online. So that sort of our connection is no longer based on demographics, but it's really based on what I need and what I value.
And as you use that two-tier segmentation scheme, are you finding that there's still correlations between that traditional scheme and the behavioral scheme that you've added on top?
Absolutely. I mean, as you think about certain industries, let's take life insurance, for example, that is very, very correlated to age and also income. Someone within the younger age bracket is not going to really think about life insurance, and also someone within a lower income bracket may not have the means to think about life insurance. So that's one area that we definitely saw in an industry where demographics do play a big factor. Or other things like healthcare. Again, my income may drive the type of service that I'm used to. It's an expectation that I have, that I can afford. What will be interesting is we see, for example, in healthcare with the healthcare exchanges that are going to be going on in 2014, it is now increasing access to folks that never really had healthcare, for example, before. So it will be interesting to see as a couple of years from now how those folks will react and whether there'll be more of a blurred line amongst, let's say, the younger generation of folks with lower income that never had access to healthcare, whether their needs may go more aligned with folks that have had healthcare for years. So that will be interesting to see as we look at the trends.
So now that I've been introduced to this model, I'm the CEO, and I turn around to my CIO, and I say, okay, so how can we track this? How can we get these metrics? How can we create the sort of customer experience model? So if I'm the CIO thinking about this, what sort of tools might I be considering, especially if I'm an SAP user, as all of our readers are?
I think a couple of things. One is what we presented here at the Radar is more of a model and how to think about your customers and how to maybe organize your data. What I think would be interesting is to capture, so you can use this as to set up your model, but then you capture transactional data as you normally would within the SAP tools that you use. And if you can, again, start to conduct these types of studies, whether it be the Radar or something else at your organizational level, to start mashing in with what are your customers, what are their needs, with transactional data to validate whether that's the right breakup, and also start to hone down what are the things you need to improve on, I think that's where you're going to really start to see the value. So it can't be, as I mentioned before, siloed where the CIO sits alone and works with his organization to figure out what tools to use, but really working with the other business leaders such as the CMO, such as other folks, the COO, to understand how the operations are handling. Really working across the organization, figuring out what's that right customer data set that I need, both looking at a transactional state, but also looking at other things such as demographics and other pieces, and then being able to mash that data within one centralized place to then start conducting analytics. That, I think, is critical. We have to get away from this siloed approach, but really looking at the customer as one.
Well, I think upon seeing more of these results, you're going to have many more converts to getting away from that approach.
Hope so.
Well, thank you very much for bringing all of this really interesting information to us today, Shivali.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
And thank you to all of our listeners for joining us on this podcast.